Hello, hello. This is Rob.
Hello. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Who's on today?
This is Lisa, and Tony is here. Mike will be with us shortly, and Keith will not be here this week. He's our branch manager. He's in a manager's meeting somewhere.
Okay. Well, wonderful. So, what is on your mind on this beautiful February day?
So, Rob, this is Tony. Last week, I kind of asked you some questions on the folders. I did read the chapters that you told me to read, which kind of go through the folder contents and how the folders are supposed to work. So that was helpful. I did get clarity on that. At this point, you know, I'm really just having more conversations with clients as I have my normal conversations with them. I'm kind of introducing them. And in fact, I looked at the scripts that you put in your workbook. Not that I'm going directly off the scripts, but I'm kind of incorporating some of the language in that.
Sure.
You know, the first class comparison, you know, you have a first class ticket on the plane, and there's a limited number of seats, but you know, the good news. So I'm not going exactly with that, but kind of using the same language when I talk to clients and introduce them to, you know, the process that we're starting to go through.
Right.
We haven't scheduled any of the calls or any of the 1242 yet, but I'm starting to kind of let clients know, like, hey, this is a process we're going through, and in the near future, Lisa's going to be reaching out to you, you know, to start scheduling appointments.
So, Tony, have you figured out when you want to do your calls?
When, as far as days of the week, you mean, or times?
Time of day, days of the week, yeah.
I don't know. I guess Mike and I would have to kind of talk about that. We haven't talked about that yet.
Because once, you know, you're going to be like a doctor. You know, once you schedule, you build your schedule, that's your schedule. And a lot of people aren't used to that. And all of a sudden they're like, wow, I've got to go to work and I've got, you know, grand rounds to make in the morning. And then I've got all these patient appointments and so forth. So you want to think it through before you do sign up the people, because that, you know, you can change it, but
right.
You know, why would you change it if it's a good schedule for the clients? But you don't want to make it just for the clients' convenience. You want to put your life in there too, right? So if you've got a time when you like to work out, or there's a time when you need to be with your family, or there's a time, you know, you got to take certain breaks during the day and so forth. You got to build that into your schedule. You know, there's a time when you like to prospect, etc. Go ahead, Mike.
My day is like that. Like today, I had a 9. You at 11. I have a 1 and a 2:30. Okay, yesterday I had 3 of them. I don't even remember the times right now. So my day is built like that now. The 1 o'clock is the Japanese baseball player's wife that I talked to you about a week ago coming in with her mother.
Yep, beautiful.
To start the paperwork, that's the 1 to 1.5 million.
Yep.
So that's like my day, but that's every day, kind of.
Well, the difference will be, instead of 3 appointments, if you have 100 clients, there'll be 5 appointments every day. So
yeah,
you want to think
Mike,
about
Mike's talking about like the face-to-face, whereas you're talking about, you know, we're scheduling time each day to make a phone call where the client expects you to be calling. And,
right.
You know, again, 10 o'clock, you're calling Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, and you're going over these 3 or 4 items for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, right?
Right. But, you know, if you've got it just depends, right? Sometimes people will say, oh, you don't need to call me, and then they'll want to, you know, they'll want to talk for 45 minutes. because they got all these dishes.
Right, you're blocking off an hour just in case.
Yeah, you're blocking off an hour. But every with the 12-4-2, with the scheduler, the way we've set it up, if you have 100 clients, you'll have one in-person meeting every day.
Okay.
So just kind of, you'll have two. The way it works is you'll have one in-person meeting, you'll have one quarterly review, and you'll have three regular scheduled appointments. Now, those become shorter as time goes on, as you knock off more issues from their financial plan and so forth. But the in-person meetings are in-person meetings. So if typically you don't stick to a schedule on those, you're going to have to get used to a schedule because you're going to, guess what, have another appointment after that. So they need to be kept to around 50 minutes. Now, the advantage you have is you talk to everybody every month. When it comes to the in-person meeting, it can go much faster than normal. So that's the advantage. You can accomplish everything you need in 2 hours. Unless you're doing a financial plan and then you need to set up another appointment, the follow-up, and so forth. But I just want you to think about that as, you know, you're working on creating your schedule. And you want to think about, you know, when am I going to take my vacations? Every quarter there's a five-week month. Am I going to use that for prospecting? Am I going to use that for vacations? What am I going to do with that time, that extra time? Because that's not part of the schedule. So there is some relief from the schedule for those 5 week months, but they're not always 5 week. I mean, they're not an extra week. Some days there's 3 days and so forth. But anyway, and you want to coordinate when you're there and, you know, between you guys, Mike and Tony, you want to make sure, you know, there's somebody there all the time so you don't take vacations at the same time.
Right. Rob, one of the things I was looking at, too, was the, you know, like the 24-month call topics that you have.
Yeah.
There's like 2 years worth of monthly topics to discuss, potential topics that obviously they're not set in stone. But the one thing that I thought that kind of, you know, as I'm looking at these, a lot of the clients that we work with don't have a lot of the things that are, like, for instance, like annuities, life insurance. Like, I mean, some of our clients have stuff like that, and then I would say the majority of them don't. And even our Supernova clients, which, again, are not, you know, they're not all 7, 10, 20, 30, $50 million clients. A lot of them are $1, $2 million clients where they've got IRAs, they've got a joint account, they've got Social Security.
Right.
And that's it. You know, it's a very simple situation, even though they've got really good accounts. A lot of those 24 topics are not applicable. I'm a little concerned that we're gonna run out of things to talk about with a client like that on a monthly basis.
Good.
Not in general,
no,
just when you're talking every month.
Right. It's a really good question. What I suggest is, for example, we change the annuity, when you get the new copy of the workbook, we change that annuity topic to discuss beneficiaries. Because, you know, if you ask your clients, who's the beneficiary of your IRA? Maybe they know, maybe they don't. Who's the beneficiary of this insurance policy? Who's the beneficiary of that annuity? Who's the beneficiary? So it covers a little different topic, which is absolutely critical to them, but they don't spend any time thinking about it. So that would be a more generic topic that could apply to everybody. And then topics like, instead of mortgages, you might use a topic like the liability side of your balance sheet. Let's just talk about debt in general. How do you feel about debt? How do you handle debt? Now, do you, you know, and just find out, just a probing question about how they manage liabilities. Do they have credit card debt? Do they, you know, most people don't even know about securitized loans. They don't even know about margin. They understand mortgages and they understand credit card debt. But in between, they don't know the other two. Now, you don't want to use margin unless it's kind of an emergency, it'd be much better to use a securitized loan, a lot less money, and much more flexible. So, you know, lots of interesting things you can do for people that they didn't know was available. And that's, you know, long-term care. You know, that's a whole topic of, you know, how do you all feel about the aging process? You know, what are your plans? You know, they say, well, we're going to stay in our home forever. And I say, so who's going to be your caregiver? And they go, well, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. You know, are your children nearby? Yeah. Do you really want that to be their role? You know, and they're like, no, I don't want to be a burden on anybody. So maybe we should think about that. You know, the average person in a retirement community is 85. Okay. And they always go in too late. They should go in sooner. Just like most decisions, people make them after the optimal time. They make them in a crisis when one person's really sick, and then it's really hard to get into the best communities because they don't want sick people. It's very weird. But a whole nother business discussion is that, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about businesses, you know, the transition of business folks from their working life, whether they own their own private company or they are retiring from a big company. That's a traumatic red letter day, red letter year for them, with lots of psychological challenges and other things, not just financial. But we don't try and talk about that transition from living in your own home to being somewhat dependent on others and how you're going to handle that. Which is another huge topic to discuss with people. So there's plenty to talk about if we get them to open up. And the 1242, what you're going to find is that people will start opening up if you ask the right questions. So it's important that you...
Quick question here, okay? Only because
yep.
you hit on something, okay, that's going to come up today in the meeting with the... With the mother and the daughter, because this was something that I talked to the husband and wife about last month, and they didn't want to talk about anything. We'll talk about it later. I said, fine, okay. And then I had the insurance guy look at their, you know, their policies, and the guy, he's out there, you know, he's out there and he's in the bullpen. So the mother's going to come in with the daughter. They're going to transfer this in, and then what I was going to do today, maybe give me a little bit of help with this one, is say, okay, next meeting is with you and your husband again, because we got to take a look at those policies, and we got to take a look at the viability of long-term care. Is that's how I should go with this, sort of?
Well,
how do you feel about the long-term care? Because there's money there. It's like $140,000 or $150,000 in cash, I think, in these policies. And they're just there, and I think we need to discuss it, and I think we got to bring it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you do your, you know, I can't tell you what's their priorities and how they feel about things and so forth. I just know that there's benefits to having a long-term care policy. It's expensive. But on the other hand, the reason – you do long-term care is because you're not going to have a huge amount of money to take care of basically yourself. Or you don't want to put it on your family to make decisions which are in conflict with their best interests.
When you say a huge amount of money, could you define where do you consider to be huge amounts of money?
Because well, I would say somebody with more than $5 million does not need long-term care, but with a caveat, okay? The caveat is this. And I've seen this. This has happened. When mom needs to go into a retirement community or she's in one and she needs assisted living or, nursing care, it's expensive, okay, unless you prepaid it and all that. And the daughter, you know, even though she's sweet and nice, sees a pot of money there, right? Sees $3 million. And if mom spends $100,000 a year on herself to be cared for the next 10 years, that's $1 million that the daughter doesn't have. So what's the choice here? The daughter says, I think I'll move mom to a little less expensive facility, which is a dump compared to where she is because she wants the money. So do you really want to put your kids in that position where they choose themselves over you and then feel guilty about it the whole rest of their life?
Could you give me an insight on something, okay?
Yeah.
In meeting with the family that has the $5 or $6 million, and it's maybe closer to $7 million,
yep.
Every time I sit down and talk with them, they're concerned about their son, who is 25 or 26 years old. They asked me if I could get their son into Muhlenberg College, where I was a professor, and Muhlenberg turned him down. So obviously this kid isn't the sharpest pencil in the box, but he's inheriting the father's business, okay?
Yep.
Now, the son had to get married.
Okay. Story gets better.
Now we turn the page, and now they have 3 kids.
Yep.
The father sat down with the son, and the father's brother, he has a son. And the two fathers sat down with the two sons and essentially told them, go in and get your tubes tied. Okay? the parents are worried that the son may have a divorce.
Sure.
Because the daughter-in-law says, oh, I want to have more kids.
Yeah.
Okay, and the daughter-in-law doesn't want to go. Now, this is very sensitive, but it's something that they keep bringing up. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, so, the next meeting with them, first is the CPA, and then it's with their trust attorney over in New Jersey. Because they bring this up at every meeting. And I'm bringing it up because you talk to people like me who do business with wealthy people.
Yep.
Okay, and my ability to handle this correctly, these people are a real good sphere of influence because their friends are all 5 and 6 and 7 million people.
Sure.
So any thoughts about what I'm bringing up to you?
Yeah.
One of the things
that you don't do is you don't counsel people on things that you're not an expert on. But you do, remember we talked about creating that enthusiastically endorsed model?
Yeah.
So one of the things that you should do is you should give them advice as to where to get good advice. All right? So, and these got to be, this is enthusiastically endorsed people that you can trust. So, one a very important thing that you do is you build a network of people that won't take advantage of you or your clients. This is critical.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably need a bit of a psychologist here, as well as, you know, other experts that could help them with estate planning and other issues. We'd need to spend more time on this. I probably can give you an answer, but I need to know a lot more. Okay, you're painting a picture of a dysfunctional family. Okay, families can protect themselves in various ways against divorce, and I mean, it's not that hard.
You mean using
trust?
So you use trust.
Okay. Right. So you use trust to protect the son against the daughter and so forth. I would not even come close to the discussion about tying tubes and things like that. They're going to be delighted.
They brought it up in front of me, and I was like,
tell them,
oh my God.
tell him this. Tell him your consultant is a grandfather, and the more grandchildren you can have, the better. Okay? Just tell him that. All right? There's an upside to children that have children. You have more grandchildren, which is the greatest blessing in the world. And to not worry too much about what, this is an expression, don't go around borrowing problems. Anticipating, you know, I was a Navy pilot, right? So you anticipate, you watch your six, but you don't spend your time thinking I'm going to crash or somebody's going to shoot me down. What you do is you concentrate on doing the right thing consistently with the decisions in front of you, anticipating what's going to happen, but not borrowing problems. Okay?
Okay, I didn't mean to dominate the conversation, but it's just something that they keep bringing up whenever we sit down and talk. And they brought it up once, they brought it up twice. And
but they're just worried about that the son is getting, his expenses are going up, his revenues are probably flat or going down, and they see that family being underwater with every new child, you know, costing $1 million each. Well, I have two grandchildren. I wish I had 10, but I don't.
Marriage, that's all.
Yeah, if it's a bad marriage because they had to get married and it's always been, you know, shaky, then clearly the son has enough intelligence to go have a vasectomy because he, you know, but that's, I don't know. Maybe the son isn't in, you know, is, you know, okay. But he's going to turn over the business to the son. I hope the son is not an idiot. That's a much worse decision than, you know, I'd rather pay the son a salary to stay away from the business rather than paying him to go in and wreck it. Okay?
Well, the other brother's son's pretty sharp.
Well, then that's good.
Yeah, they got one real sharp one, and the other son doesn't seem like the sharpest pencil in the box. I think that's fair to say. Don't you think, Tony?
Well, Bob Jr. sharp. I don't know about the other son. I didn't meet him yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for your insight.
The good news is they're sharing everything with you, which means that's the kind of relationship you want. You want that. But you also want to have solutions for them. That's why you're asking me. Okay, so just figure out, who are the right people to come up with answers for them and give them good advice? That's where your enthusiastically endorsed list comes from. So,
Rob,
that's a perfect example.
If these clients have a meeting set up with the CPA and Mike and I, or just Mike, get invited to that meeting with the CPA, should we, first of all, assuming they really like this CPA that they have, is that the kind of thing where we should pursue the CPA to be, you know, a center of influence for us?
Sure, but the CPA is not a counselor on this kind of thing, right? The CPA is a counselor on tax, right? So he can tell you the right tax structure to avoid taxes. Now, he can tell you how to protect assets, but that's really more of an estate planning attorney's business. Sometimes estate planning attorneys are also CPAs, so that can be helpful. Or, you know, I had a tax attorney, and he was very helpful on all that stuff because he knew estate planning backwards and forwards, and he knew the tax ramifications. So you may, you know, that's a that guy you can actually use, but be careful to ask, you know, in involving just plain CPAs in anything to do with, you know, anything but taxes, you know. But they can help you with businesses, and they can probably help with how to structure the business so that, you know, the kids, I don't know. If I were the business people, I certainly wouldn't turn it over to the kids to the two sons until I had vetted them completely. You know, I would, there would be no worry in my mind that the son was going to run it into the business because, frankly, I wouldn't, you know, if I were running the business, I would always run my family one way and my business the other. The business would always be run based on performance and capability, and the family is run on emotion and love, right? And you got to separate those two.
Okay. All right. I only brought it up because they keep bringing it up. And I would be absolutely be shocked if the mother who's coming in with her daughter actually brought up her son in front of the son's sister. But it seems to be on their mind a lot. Almost every doggone conversation, even the telephone conversation that comes up, which has surprised me the extent of the concern of the family, which is why I brought it up today. Now, in our group, you know, everything is between our group and everything, you know. But I was just a little surprised because it's a little bit more than what I think is the normal concern that people would have in terms of passing business from a generational pass-through.
Oh, all you have to do is watch any of these soap operas, you know, and you see the concern, the craziness of families.
Yeah, this is a Hallmark movie, is what you're telling me. Okay.
Right. I mean, I hope it's a Hallmark movie and not a, you know, one of these other crazy ones that doesn't end up well. Anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Look, the job of the future financial advisor is going to be much more of a consultant on life, like a life coach, than he or she is going to be just a financial coach. And we need to understand that role and responsibility. So one of the things that we talk about later on is creating a mastermind group around people selling their businesses. But here today we talked about creating a mastermind group around an issue, passing on a business to loved ones, okay? It's the same kind of thing. It's just a little different variation on selling the business. Instead, you're passing it on. And then we have issues having to do with families transitioning. I mean, think about how important that is. The trauma that a person goes through when they retire is maybe the greatest trauma they go, other than divorce, it's a very hard thing for human beings to go through. Retirement, you think it's great. No, it's not. It's very hard. The average person really struggles psychologically for at least a year or two after they retire. And we as financial advisors don't get that. We think, oh, it's all great. Well, we haven't been through it, so we have no idea. The advantage I have is I've been through it. I've been watching my dad go through it, watched my brothers go through it. So I'm, you know, in clients and all that. But personally going through that, you know, I've gone through the transition of my mom from independent living in a house to going through the entire continuum of a retirement community, from independent living to hospice care. So, you know, that advantage that you have in living those things for others can be such a help in passing on good advice to those about to enter that space. So this is to the point where you really want to have on your speed dial a psychologist to work with people that are retiring so they can get some counseling, so they can not have to be so alone doing it. The same thing for people that are going into a retirement community, helping them with, you think about it, they got to sell their house, they got to stay, you know, think about how traumatic, and it's usually up to the daughter to guide them through this whole thing, and she's completely unprepared. So, you know, you got to clean out the house.
You're mentioning something that is just another issue that we have. We have a guy who's worked in the State Department in Washington for 45 years, and he's retiring. And Lisa, when's the money coming in?
He is faxing over the paperwork, so it's still in process.
Okay, so we should have it in a week,
No.
More?
Probably it'll be a couple weeks.
In any event, it seems to me that in talking to him and in talking to the wife, I don't know this yet, but it seems to me as though they both have their finances separate. It doesn't seem as though at this early stage, because conversations with him have been portfolio conversations. Conversations with her have been about spending money. There hasn't been, a sit down where we say, okay, you know, we constantly have to liquidate stuff in her portfolio to meet the fact, her margin, because she just goes out and spends. And I think that this is something, this transition, I think that we have to have a conversation with these people.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a budgeting conversation. And I think that this is a guy who's traveled all over the world.
Right.
And I got a hunch that I sense he's ill-prepared for this. He's 76 or 7.
I'm not sure. 76, maybe.
76, you know, State Department his whole life, 40 years in the State Department in D.C., very high up, you know, good guy. I mean, good client, a lot of money there. There's a couple million in real estate.
There too, we only have the retirement accounts for both of them. That possibly part of the conversation could be opening up AAA.
Yeah.
And talking about a budget and spending and, you know, that, and getting all their assets here included.
You need to do a complete financial workup on them. You need a completely financial plan. And no better time than to do it right now with Pat. For them, a cash flow analysis is critical. Now, keep in mind, this is an important thing. No one ever spends the right amount of money at retirement. They either spend too much or they spend too little. Just think about it. What is the exact right number that they should spend? Well, it all depends, right? So when people say, I have no budget, you say, you know, you could be way off on how much you're spending versus what you should spend based on reasonable probabilities. And you now have a finite amount of money. So we have to think a little differently now. It's fine when you've got good, nice cash flow and you're bringing in $200,000 a year. But that's changed, okay? And so we need to be smart about how we balance this budget. We can't spend any more than a reasonable amount of the money every year based on the probabilities of rates of return. And that's a sobering thing for the wife, I guarantee you. She's not going to want to hear about it. Because husband has always brought in the money, and the husband probably doesn't pay any attention because he's guilty, feels guilty traveling all the time, so he just lets her spend whatever she feels like. Well, now the two of them are actually going to be living together, having to deal with each other. This is traumatic, see? And all of a sudden, money becomes an issue. So whatever their relationship issues are, now you throw in money as another issue. And now you've got a potential fraught with problems, okay, arguments and challenges. So you want to deal with the facts and keep the emotion out of it for you guys. So you want to really, you know, and again, here comes a psychologist, right, because these guys are going through a traumatic change. And guess what? Change creates problems. Psychological problems, depression, all kinds of things. So that's where this enthusiastically endorsed Rolodex is critical. And you can gain great, you can create a fabulous brand based on your ability to deal with these things. Just kind of think of yourself as a doctor that they're willing to talk to about their real issues. It changes the whole relationship in you. And even if you refer them to a doctor where they talk about their real issues, it's going to be such a help to you versus fighting over them not doing the right thing, right? Not in compliance. Now, keep in mind, you cannot control people. So you just give them your best advice. They violate it. I've always told everybody, I'd go into an office and I'd speak to them. I'd say, okay, every one of you has a client right now that's overspending their money. They're outspending their principal. I want you to come in and talk to me about them. And what we're going to do is we're going to make a decision, put them on a budget, and then put them on probation. And if they're not in compliance after 2 months with our probation, then unfortunately you're going to need to fire them. Because we will end up being sued because of our fiduciary responsibility wasn't carried through to protect them from themselves. We did not protect them from themselves. So if you can't control them, then the only thing you can do is just to fire them. And then they'll go sue somebody else.
We went through that process about 6 months ago. We fired a guy with $4.5 million.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Because he was, he wanted things that he didn't, he wanted good returns. He didn't want to put money in the market. He wanted to get a high yield in bonds, and bond interest rates were low. He wanted access to our inventory, and our inventory went down at 4 o'clock, and he would access the inventory after 4. And he kept complaining, and then his complaints became four-letter words.
Yep.
So we fired
Goodbye.
Him. You know, it was, and then ironically enough, he died 2 weeks ago.
Perfect.
I mean, it's not perfect, but I mean, it was awful. I mean, too bad because the son had done so well, but I don't think the son will ever come back.
Well, too bad. You know, you did the right thing. I mean, I don't mean perfect in the sense that, you know, he deserved it or anything, but I mean, that's life, right? That was a demonstration of life.
He was effing Lisa. He was, you know,
yeah,
my sister, and I can't have that. I mean, I have a thick skin, so does Tony. Lisa?
No, we don't take that from anybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the advantage of Supernova, is that you're no longer just accepting anybody. You have your 11 screens. And one of them is they're nice people, okay? So don't do business with people that aren't reasonable. Don't take your advice. And we got to run. But one of the things that I talk about is the difference between a customer and a client. So we have customers, we have clients, we have advocates, and then we have ambassadors. You want everybody to be an ambassador, and that's somebody that introduces you to someone of value every year that turns into a client. The customer is somebody that buys things from you, sees you as a vendor, and treats you like a croupier at the window of a casino, right? That's not who we are. Now, your job is to convert customers into clients, and that's somebody that takes your advice, you like, you trust. They pay you a fee, and they've done a financial plan. Then they really are a client. Until they've done all those, they're not a client. Any one of those is missing, they're not a client. They're a customer. So your job is to move customers into clients or get rid of them. All right.
I'm going to say something here. Honestly, when I went into this process, I didn't want to go into it. I'll be very honest with you. I didn't want to go into it. Tony said to me, we have extra money. I think it would be helpful. Lisa was a catalyst too. But this has been helpful to me. This is a good process. I may not do all of it. I may not get to all of it. But a lot of the stuff is good. And some of the experiences you have, you know, me being able to talk to some of these things, rather, I'm thinking what I need to do in some of these meetings is shut up and let them talk and not say anything.
Right.
Because sometimes they don't want to hear anything. I'm afraid if I say something, it would be the wrong thing, and maybe they just want to get it off their chest with somebody they trust.
Yep.
You know?
It's good. It's good. By the way, you know, I'm coaching a team now that I coached 10 years ago, and they're going back through the whole program again, and they're doing every single little piece of it because first time they went through, it was kind of the same thing. They went through, they did a good job, but they didn't do a great job. And then they realized, I need to really do this. So congratulations for recognizing the value, but you'd be surprised how every little part of it is important because it's been thoroughly thought through and will help you no matter what. But I'm happy to, you know, have you do better with some of what I teach than none of it. So congratulations. I guess the homework would be to spend your time listening without judgment, trying to help your clients make better choices and to grow up. It's really the most valuable thing you can ever do. In terms of just what actually should be your homework, try and sign up. Don't wait to sign up people for your schedule because you want to get comfortable, you know, actually talking to people using the scheduler and your folders. So go ahead this week and sign up a few people, even if you have to sign them up or have Lisa sign them up. But get them signed up so that they will start to get into the queue so you can start to get used to what the schedule is going to feel like. And make sure that you make up your own calendar that works in your best interest, not just the clients. Okay?
Thanks, Rob.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I'm going to start talking to clients. This is the thing. And I